Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Masaba Gupta. Each week on How I Masaba from Luminary, I talk to one incredible woman about how they do, well, them. These are the inspirational mindsets, necessary daily practices, and only funny in hindsight experiences that have defined and continue to drive our culture's greatest. Let me tell you a little story. At the tender age of 14, a little girl from Andhra Pradesh was called up into the probables to represent the Indian cricket team. At the time, she didn't make the cut into the final team. She came from a traditional Tamilian family and learned Bharatanatyam growing up. And when she was around 9, she would accompany her brother to his cricket practice. When everyone was done, the coach would let her hit a few balls. And eventually the coach sees something in her and tells their parents that they should focus on their daughter's cricketing career and not their son's. Seems like the setup to a Bollywood movie, right? Well, it is. In this movie, the little girl went on to become arguably the greatest cricketer in the world, breaking record after record. See, this was no ordinary Bollywood film. It was a biopic based on the life of a true Indian icon and my guest today. I'm speaking to Mithali Raj. Mithali, thank you so much. Welcome to the show. Welcome to my podcast. I wanted to start by asking you, you're one of the few people who can actually answer this question. What does it feel like to see yourself, to see an actor play you on screen? What was that like? Did you enjoy the movie?
I did when the first time I watched the movie, just before it was released in theaters, to see the story on the big screen. Honestly, first it was a little weird to see my own story and someone playing me, the younger Mithali and then the grown up one, the journey and everything. But I really enjoyed the movie in the sense like it did touch all those vulnerable moments which I faced.
But was there anything that you felt might be a bit too much to share, or maybe you felt like something that you really wanted to talk about and get out there? Because sometimes I think sports persons are misunderstood. Did you feel like that?
I never thought about it that way when they reached out to me for the story. For me, it was first, I refused to take it up because, as you said, there were these moments which I didn't want to share with the world, which was mine alone, and I kept it within me. But then I realized that it was also a platform where I could tell people the evolution or the growth of women's cricket from where it started, at least from my perspective, from my lens, and the hardships of a woman cricketer in the 90s, in the early 80s, and the difficult choices one had to make to turn cricket as their profession for a woman, for a girl. And this would be the right opportunity to get that on the big screen, at least for people who didn't know about women's cricket for years. And also my way of being showing my gratitude to all my ex or senior players, ex-women cricketers and senior players, that they have kept the sport alive for a young girl like me to take it up.
So let's go back to the beginning, Mithali. You clearly haven't had what they say is a regular childhood. Since you were a teenager, this game has been your life. You've dealt with this constant pressure to perform, right, and be on top. And now at the end of your career, with the gift of hindsight, What are your thoughts on starting out that early? You think, did you make it, was it better dealing with the pressure back then, being slightly young, being slightly more sort of spontaneous? And is there some part of your childhood that you feel you missed out?
Of course, I think I've missed out a large part of my childhood, school days or college days. But looking back, I don't regret anything because one is, I'm a very ambitious, I've been always an ambitious girl. I've had big ambitions, big goal of playing for India, winning the World Cup. So I don't make, there's no bones about it. Like, you know, that is what I am. And if you want to achieve greatness, you have to be prepared to give a pound of flesh. It doesn't come easy. You have to sacrifice. And I was ready to do that. And I was able to do that is why I find myself today where I have so much of time to sort of post my retirement, able to work on the bonds that probably I never had time. I've missed out on birthday parties, family gatherings, family holidays, school excursions.
Good food.
of course, yeah. And relationships.
Yeah.
So I let go of everything. And now I've got time to work again on those things. But I'm happy that I was able to achieve my goals, which I set out. And of course, not on my own, but I did have a great support system in terms of my parents, of my friends, teammates, coaches, mentors. But yes, I would say that starting very early, I mean, every sport is beautiful because it teaches you so many things in a very different manner other than the classroom education that one gets. You learn to accept failures. You learn to be humble in your success because in sports, there is so much of uncertainty. You prepare for one situation. You tend to face completely different situation. And that expects you to be innovative or creative, come out with different ideas. And when you travel as young as me, as a 10-year-old, you know, in trains, unreserved, you're on your own. You know, you have to find ways. You don't have your mother around to sort of hold you and probably help you get over those tears. You cry on your alone. You're alone.
And you are your own shoulder to cry on.
Yeah. You do have your teammates. You have your senior players. But then that's a very different dynamics. So a young kid who's traveling on her own has to take decisions on her own because those were the times when we didn't have phones or the technology wasn't there. So to reach out to my parents was difficult. We just had those STD and ISD, some booth in the corner of the street. So if I'm faced to make choices, I would make my own decisions and also be responsible for the consequences that has, good or bad. So my learning as a young kid was so much more than my own cousins at that age. And that is all thankful to the sport that I played.
You know, it's interesting you say this, but when I was talking to Sania Mirza, who was my first guest on the podcast, and she said that sports persons by nature are selfish. It's just the nature of the beast. It's just that you achieve that level of greatness because there is that sort of very single-minded vision to be the greatest sports person in whatever sport that you're playing. Do you think that's true?
See, I would not use the term selfish, maybe more of a self-centered people in a way. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because, selfish has a very different terminology if you think as such. But as athletes, if we are going to spend more time with ourselves and choose to feed our stomach first, because we have a goal, we need to eat right at a particular time, follow a strict diet, follow a discipline of waking up early, getting to bed early. Because that are the demands of the lifestyle that we would want to keep up to achieve our goal of being the best athlete. So I would say, yeah, we spend more time on ourselves because that's what we are sort of conditioned right from a young age
right.
to do that. So in a way, when we are beginners or, just started in a sport, we try to spend all our time to ourselves in becoming the best version. But when we achieve success, we should be approachable to all of them. You know, there is that difference. When you're trying to go up, you know, it's not a, you have to spend more time in structuring your goal And that requires you to cut off all the distractions. Sometimes people do. But when you achieve your goal, then you have to sort of be available for people because in a way you're going to help them. You have to be reachable.
Yeah. But you started very young. What was that one moment when you knew that cricket is my game? I'm going to excel at this.
I think when I scored 100 on debut, until then it was like I can make it or I might not make it to the Indian team. But when I scored that 100 at 16 years, I realized I belong here. You know, because when you score runs at that level, at the highest level, it gives a sense of boost or confidence that, you know, you do have the talent and the ability because you scored these runs. So you belong in at the stage. So that, I think, was very critical for me to understand, because there were a bit of times in my career where I felt like I don't want to pursue cricket. You know, because it sometimes gets to you, the sort of regimen that I had to go through. But I think that realization really helped me, you know, even in the appreciation and the recognition of just representing your country. It gives you a different high.
Yeah. No, completely agree. But I also feel like, Mithali, with any sport, athletes talk about how their team becomes their family. And I think you did talk very briefly about this, that they were there, but that's a very different dynamic. Now, dysfunctional, it can be a bit dysfunctional at times, that relationship as well with the team. And in a team, when you're all young, you all want to enjoy your life. Like you said, you know, you missed out on the birthday parties and all the good stuff. And you spend so much time together, there's these ups and downs, all of that. I wanted to know if these friendships are different from the ones in the regular world, or are they the same?
See, with the concept of friendship for me at work, of course, cricket is professional. So at work and in general did change over a period of time. Because as I said, when I started very young, I didn't have friends. I just had my mother. And maybe a schoolmate. So they were my friends. When I got into the Indian team, I had teammates who I spent more time because traveling and attending camps. And in those days, we were put up in dormitories. We traveled by train. So wherever we went, we were like a group, a bunch of players, you know, traveling, playing together, having food together and sharing the issues or problems, having fun. So at one point I felt they are my family. They are my, like, you know, more than my cousins. Because I never knew what my cousins were because I've never been part of family gatherings.
But correct.
I got to know a lot more about my own teammates than my cousins. My cousins were strangers to me and my teammates were like, no, I literally knew them, how they would react to a particular situation.
In and out, yeah.
So that much I would get to know them. But when things changed in terms of like when the setup was more professional, when the dorms changed into hotel rooms, when the trains changed into flights, you know, and all, when that professional environment creeped in, things do change, you know, because now there is social media, the presence on social media. So what happens is, as a leader also, sometimes when you're trying to, say, when I go out for a dinner with 6 or 7 girls, and then the next day I had to drop a couple of them because of non-performance. Probably they might not end up having dinner again in the near future. So it's sometimes, you know, I find it very sad that people tend to analyze other people's actions a lot more than, you know, introspecting their own, you know, from where they come in their actions. But again, so, you know, as a player, they only limit their thinking to their own position in the team and their own opportunities. But as a leader, you think the bigger picture, you know, what benefits the team or what composition works. So in this setup, then I find it very difficult to have friendships or to continue to have friendships. Because as a leader, at the end of the day, even I'm human. I need to also express myself to somebody. Or work my demons around, you know, what is happening in my own heart. So I need to have somebody where there is an element of trust that they will not use these things, you know, tomorrow against me.
You. Yeah.
And yeah. So then I realized over the years that It is good to have somebody who's not part of that setup, who can give you a very different perspective for all the things that I'm probably got stuck at, and also can give a very probably give the neutral opinion.
Yeah, it's unbiased
without being biased. Yeah. So I realized that, you know, I have a set of friends that, you know, who are not part of this fraternity, and I do confide in them, and their perspective really helped me sort of get more clarity. Although I have one of my best friends through cricket, like, you know, we met through our under 19 levels, played for India, had a lot of fun touring, having all those musti and everything. And now most of them are retired and into different capacities in women's cricket, but we are still friends. We are all good friends. But yes, I believe with the professional setup, it's very difficult to have a genuine friendship.
Friendship. You know, you said that about leadership as well. And I think that even for me, I run my own business. I have been for the last 12 years. I keep questioning my abilities as a leader. And I think women do that a lot more than men. And I just think that at sometimes I feel, am I not allowed to make a mistake? You know, am I not allowed to lose my temper, or, you know, say something that's just not the right way to be a leader, right? But I do think that I find it very hard to choose between being a soft leader or a harsh leader. Have you ever had that difficulty of how kind to be, how nice to be, but also to be stern so that boundaries are maintained?
Of course, I think these dilemmas every leader would go through, because there is no set of rules or a book or a manual how to be a good leader. Everybody has the leadership qualities. Very few get to actually use that or develop that with the role that they play. When I became a young captain in 2005, I didn't have a prior experience of leading a senior team, and I had ex-captains under me. And as you rightly said, it was my first series as a captain, and that too in World Cup stage. I doubted myself if I would be the right choice to lead India. But then I knew that being a deputy to two captains for the before that for 4 years, I've started to understand how I can, you know, maneuver the girls, or how I can be under the ex-captains and lead them. You know, that team really helped me. But I think my real challenge as a leader came post the 2005 World Cup. As a young leader, I thought, you know, my way or the highway sort of a thing. You know, you got to listen to me because I'm the leader. And I thought, you know, because in our society, the captain is made the topmost, the person who's more powerful. So the concept of leadership was, okay, I have got the power and people should listen to me. That was my initial thinking as a leader. But when I was sacked as a captain after 4 years, and when I got to spend those 3 years with the team, I got to mingle around with the players, I started to do a bit of homework as to what sort of a leader that they all are looking up to. What do they look in a leader, the qualities they want the captain to be, and how can you keep your team happy? So these things I worked in those 3 years, and I hope, like, if at all I get captaincy back. Now, this is a change that I'm going to do. And when I got the captaincy back, there was a complete shift in my mindset. I've started to look at captaincy or leadership as a means to serve, rather than see it as a power. You know, it was a responsibility. I had players' careers in my hand. I couldn't play with that. I am on the captain of the Indian team. There are the millions I represent at the international level. I cannot be anywhere less than my 200%. So when these thoughts started to creep in, I think I was able to do a lot of homework before any series to understand my players. And the homework was not limited to the skill aspect. Because if I'm going to work with a bunch of 15 players, each and every player's character is important. So I would analyze the characters, because what we are, we carry that onto the field as people. If you are somebody who works very hard and don't give up on the field, you carry the same attitude on the field. if you're an easy-go-lucky person, the similar thing you will face on the field as well. So I identify players through their character, who's what and how well they accept pressure. There are some who thrive under pressure and there are some who succumb to it. And as a leader, I should know which of my players is strong enough in a particular situation that I have to set. So these are the things that I do a lot. And that is what has helped me on the field. But yes, I mean, you always face these ambiguities of, you know, a player who's young, she needs to be given a good go. But you also have a senior player who needs similar support. So what do you do?
What do you do?
Choose a youngster or you choose an experienced player. So sometimes these are a very fine line. And you need to take tough calls. There are times when I've dropped my best friend from the level. So it is difficult also, but I understand that the job doesn't require my emotions. The job it is that I take the best decision for the team. So I keep aside my emotions while taking any decisions. And yes, even the aspect of you saying that as leaders, people expect you to always be right or be perfect. You know, Mithali is taking this decision and this has to work. But at the end of the day, people don't understand, you know, we are humans. You know, we also make mistakes. We also have emotions. Sometimes we need to deal with it. So I think I'm sure there are certain members who understand that with age. But there are people more often than not think that, you know, criticize you sometimes when you just let out your emotions. So.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Do you have a ritual as a sports person? Do you have a ritual where, you know, you do a specific kind of, say, some kind of breath work or something like that before you go on to a big match?
Not that I do breathing exercises, but I tend to read. I developed reading and that is my way of sort of calming my nerves. Because, you know, I'm sure, you know, even when you read, you know, you are transported to a different world. You know, you're detached from the reality, what is happening around you. And you're completely zoned out and thinking of another story altogether.
Yeah.
And reading really helps me. That's why people more often, they ask me that, you know, how come you can read while you're, you know, sitting there paddled up and your team is batting? So it's my way of sort of, you know, calming those initial butterflies or the thoughts which are sort of running like a fast-paced train, like, you know, what will happen with how the team is going to do, whether all of us are going to perform. These thoughts keep happening to you despite years of experience. Mind as such, you know, when you're playing a big game, you know what the stakes are. So there are so many thoughts which crosses your mind. All you need to do is calm yourself. And how do you, everybody have a very different way of doing that. And I realized reading helps me a lot. And that is why I always carry a book. That is one thing. And also, I do have this habit of writing a journal, sticking affirmations in the hotel rooms, wherever the places where I go a lot. So that, you know, every time there is a negative thought or there is a question, what will happen? I immediately read these lines and it sort of, you know, gives you that instant boost. Everything will be fine. Yeah.
Center yourself again.
You know, believe
again.
In your, yeah. So it's these are the ways that I found which helped me, yeah.
You've spoken about how you've managed to keep your emotions in check, and that's obviously helped you be a good captain. And on the field, you can make good decisions, but I want to talk about your leadership off the field, the people management side, which I frankly find the hardest thing to do. I find that a full-time job and it's very, very tough. Any time that you have had to put your arm around a specific teammate off the field to console them, to just make them feel like you're one of them. Has that ever happened? And how good are you at that?
I've done that a lot with the juniors because, you know, when you're playing with seniors or seniors especially, they know how to handle it because they've been in the fraternity for long. They know, you know, when you have a bad day, how to come out of it. And players of my age, it's easy to interact because there's a comfort level, you know, same age group. So you've come up the ranks under my team. So, you know, how they will understand, take them for a meal or a movie. The youngsters are difficult because they don't have an experience. And there are many youngsters who keep to themselves when things are going wrong. So those times, you really have to take time out to reach out to them. Sometimes not necessarily in front of people or in the meeting, but privately. Take them for a coffee and then reach out. Many a times, they hesitate because, yes, they've seen me as an idol and grown up, or, you know, looking in the taking inspiration from me. So it can be sort of a big thing for them to reach out to me. But as a leader, if you want your team to do well, you also need to take those people who are struggling along with you on the journey. You can't leave anybody behind. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I try and spend time with many of them off the field. He understand. Sometimes it is not necessarily that bad performance. They might be having issues at home or issues with the relationships. You know, that also is connected with your mindset when you take the field. Yeah. So it's important to identify first what is that they're struggling and then try and give support or with your own experience, give them, things that which can help them to get out of it. If it's a technical aspect, it's easy, you know.
Yeah.
But mostly it would do a lot with the mental setup. And that can be a little challenging, but yeah.
Yeah. I think sort of breaking the mind is the hardest thing when it comes to people, always. Who are some of the cricketers or just generally sports persons that you have admired mostly for their mental toughness?
I have admired Sachin. Purely because when you have such a long career like him at the highest level and you've always been at the top of the game, it's important that how he kept himself relevant at every generation of players that he's played with, within the team and also opponents, and how the game has evolved, the standard has improved and different formats. So he tried constantly to keep up with ever-growing formats and trends of the sport. And for that, it requires a lot of discipline. And he was scrutinized. Everything of his was scrutinized. And yet you find this guy walks out there and performs. Then there is Ricky Ponting from Australia. I admire him for the fact that he led a side which had all stars. I mean, it's easy to lead a side where, you know, you have players who are just coming up the ranks or beginners or youngsters. Or
also who look up to you.
Senior players.
In a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you have stars in your side, each one of them have, you know, they know that they are stars. They are good at it. And to lead a bunch of players as a captain is the most difficult thing, I feel. You know?
Yeah.
So he's done that period. Australia was probably invincible team is what they've been termed as. And he being the captain, he probably would have had to deal with so many other things in the dressing room, which the world doesn't know. You know, to have a team sync together to perform like that, match after match. you know, the likes like Shane Warne, he was a different character. There's McGrath, and there's so many players. So, you know, when you have such different characters to get them together for one purpose, one vision, it takes a lot out of a leader. And that is where I look up to Ricky Ponting.
Of course, we have to talk about the BCCI that has recently announced that women and men will receive exactly the same match fee. I think it's a great, great, great thing that's happened. It's been a long time coming. As someone whose career has almost coincided with the growth of women's cricket in the country, do you think that the sport has had a watershed moment where things will now progress very quickly? Because I think what happens was that sometimes there are young girls and young boys who don't take onto a career because they think, oh God, you know, who's going to pay for my life? It doesn't pay. So do you think this is that moment, or do you think we're still a bit far behind?
Well, I think that movement has already begun, I would say, post-2017 World Cup, where, you know, that we were runners-up. When we came back to India, a lot of things have changed. Since then, with the matches being televised, there are not many parents who are keen to get their girls into sport. But yes, I think this decision by BCCI is sort of a milestone decision in itself to pay men and women the same match fee. Because if you see, whether it is a one day or a T20, the number of hours the players put in or play is the same. So, you know, in that sense, I would say it is a great move. And now you can easily say that women's cricket on its own is a sustainable sport because you're getting paid. So if you play good level, you can play, and with the women's IPL, you can earn, and you don't really need to look out for jobs, which in the past, a lot many players were talented, but beyond a certain age, because there was no money involved or there's no money into sport, they had to go leave the sport despite being talented. And, you know, doing well, they had to move out and find greener pastures, because at the end of the day, you need to support your family financially.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that way, we couldn't really have a good pool of players coming year after year. But now, since this move, I think we've started to have under-19 teams. Now, the next year, we have the under-19 World Cup, the first edition of it. So the under-19 batch is going to graduate in another 2-3 years. You might find a couple of good, talented players getting into the senior side. So slowly, there will be a lot many girls, and the bench strength will increase with that. And obviously, you will have more girls coming into the under-19s as well with the World Cup staged every 2 years. So that will broaden the pool of players. Right now, we have probably 200, maybe 250 at the most. But then with women's IPL and the under-19 and the this decision may be given another 3-4 years.
Correct.
I think we will have a lot many girls. And it is a sport that any young girl is keen to take up, will have the support of her parents.
Parents.
Earlier, you know, if I have to talk about Sanjulan Goswami or any other cricketer of the 90s, most of my teammates had to fight with their parents to go out and play. You know, they had that thing because the parents knew you can't survive just playing cricket for passion. Passion is not going to feed you. You know, you have to earn money. So the same thing now, if you see, that is reversed. You know, your passion, you can make a career out of it.
Yeah, yeah. You're obviously starting a new chapter in your life, Mithali, and you are already a big part of the broadcasting world. You've spoken many times about your desire to be a mentor to young women. What do you see for yourself in this new off-the-field avatar?
Well, as you said, I'm dabbled into few. But I think with the vast experience that I have, mentoring definitely is something that interests me. Because as a youngster, I didn't have too many distractions in terms of social media platform, the presence, branding, or appearance on television, or fan base. These things were never part of the distractions. Our distractions are very different than the 90s kids. In the current scenario, I think there are too many things, and a youngster can easily get swayed. And I've seen, I do have few examples, like, you know, each time I see them, I was like, damn, she had so much of talent. You know, she was far better and she couldn't really make it big. What could be the reason that they were not properly, the energy or the talent is not properly channeled in a structured way that, you know, they go on to play higher level. And if such a talent plays higher level, it will benefit India. It will benefit our team. So in that sense, I would say that mentoring is something which excites me. But yes, commentary has its challenges. And anything new we start, there's always challenge and I'm up for it.
All right, last few questions and you can make them as short or as elaborate as you like. Now, there's obviously countless achievements through your career. I wanted to know if you have a most cherished memory from your playing career or on off the field.
Playing career, I would say yes, the 2014 test win. Because we were playing a test match after 8 years. Like the last test we played was in 2006. And then both the boards decided that they want to squeeze in a test match. And it was after 8 years that we were playing. And we're playing in England against a side which just won Ashes. Ashes is Australia versus England. Yes. And it's a very...
prestigious...
You know, yeah, pretty yeah. much between the sides. And correct. England won that game. They won the Ashes and they were playing us in their own backyard. So one is that playing in England, playing the longest format, the English conditions are always challenging for any cricketer. You know, I'm sure, you know, you would have read that. And I was leading a team, 11 players, out of which 8 of them were making their debut. So I was literally giving them the debut cap. Like 8 of them haven't played a test before. And we've not really had a 4-day test match even in a domestic. So they don't know what it is like to play a red ball. And that was the longest format. Now, fortunately, we were playing the test first. So as a leader, that was the most challenging thing for me, is to first educate them about the format, how it is played, and how the match can tilt either ways with just a session, or there will be rain interruption, and how you have to again alter your plans. And bowling and batting is very different to the white ball game. So a lot of these talks had to get into all those players. And we started, like, you know, it was a low scoring test match. Like the first innings, you know, they got out like 130 or something, and we got a 30 run lead. The bowlers ended up getting us this 30 run lead. And we were into the fourth day and one of our girl got injured and she had a dislocation. So she was not coming into bat. Effectively, we were like 10 batters and 6 of the batters were already in the pavilion. And we had like 70 runs to chase. And I had all these bowlers yet to bat with me. So it was a challenge. Not once did any of us left hope that, you know, we could turn things around. And... as the match progressed, it was a very exciting test match, but something which gave me a lot of satisfaction as a captain. That it not only that I had to perform as a batter, but I also have to step up as a leader and to do extra job of telling them how to play a test match. Well, it took a lot out of me and the result was very, very satisfying.
Okay, that's great. Now that you are no longer playing, there's probably more time in your life for a lot of things that you didn't have time for. Have you picked up any new passion, a project, a hobby, perhaps a new book?
I do a lot of doodling, sketches sometimes. Not seriously, though. I've not really taken it up seriously because now December is the month that I'm actually free. Otherwise, I was living out of the suitcase. So I think that's something I enjoy doing when I get some time off. And of course, reading has always been there, so...
You hold all kinds of records and there is a very real argument for you being among the greatest. Is there anyone from the current crop of players you believe is destined for greatness in the Indian team or otherwise?
I don't know about greatness because greatness definitely requires you to be consistent over a period of time, for years. So I would say talented, yes. There's one of my favorite is Shefali in the current team. A very talented youngster. There's Richa Ghosh and there are a couple of players from the under-19s. So I see them doing very well in the next 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Anyone from the men's side? that you have your eyes on as the next big thing?
I would say Shubman Gill.
I agree.
Yeah.
Do you have a go-to practice for your mental health?
I do take some time off every day to reflect how the day has been. And also that helps me to analyze my emotions. Sometimes if it is anger or hurt or even sometimes jealousy, if I spend a little bit of time with myself, I understand the roots of why I feel that. And that helps me not to take any adverse or end up doing anything adverse, but I find ways to absorb it and then probably, come up with a solution.
Right, process and it in a way.
Probably, then. Yeah, correct. And in that sense, journaling has really helped me because I pen down a lot of my emotions, and that also helped me sometimes when you go through in the past what you have done or how you have reacted to a situation and today how you react to it. It gives a glimpse of what you were and what you have become.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think then you can sort of course correct and become a better person as situations in the future.
Yeah.
And lastly, what is the best piece of advice that you've got through your career?
I think one of the advices which my dad gave very young in my career is that he said, Beta, you have to learn to fail if you want to have a long career. You have to accept that you're going to fail at some point. Because I was going through this phase where for the first time in my international career in 2006-07, I haven't scored runs in 5 innings. And I thought that was the end of my career sort of feeling, like end of life, end of the world. And I wasn't talking to anybody. And that's when my dad said that, you don't lose out on your skill or your ability overnight. Just because you're not scoring runs doesn't make you a bad player.
Yeah,
that's what he said. And if you want to have a long career, these are going to be part of your career and learn to accept it. First, accept it that you're going to fail. Then you will find a way through it. So that is something which stuck with me for a very long time to my career. And that's why I try and tell the players that today you score 100. Tomorrow you might score a 0. But that should not change your attitude towards your training or towards anything or towards the game.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is, right? Failure is such a big teacher, far bigger teacher than success ever can be.
Yeah. As long as you have the right lens to analyze it and not be too critical on yourself or the others, you will always find a solution. There's always a solution, But when we are absorbed with the baggage of, the emotions that we feel post-failure, the fear, the embarrassment, the hurt and the pain, then there is no clarity in the mind. Then we don't actually look forward. We don't actually move forward. We're stagnated there, processing, why this has happened. Yeah. I worked hard and stuff like that. So
I have a very, I have a theory for myself in order to pull me out of that, if I've done a bad collection or a bad show or something that I tried to, excel at, didn't work out. I allow myself 24 hours to grieve. I call it my grieving period. And then after that, the minute those 24 hours are over, I say, okay, now forget about it, move on and jump to the next thing. Do you have a mantra like that you tell the younger players that, listen, ye time hai grieving ka, iske baad bas back to business as usual?
Yeah, I do that. I tell because I remember telling Yastika, one of the young players, she asked me like, Didi, when you're not scoring runs, the walk to the pavilion is the longest. From the wicket. So she said, aap kya sochte us time mein when you score a 0, get out early. So I said, from there to the pavilion, I think like what I could have done better. I read the situation, everything, whatever it is. But when I remove my pads in the dressing room, that's the end of it. I'm not going to then wallow in pity I got out early and stuff. That walk is what I process in my mind. This is what has happened. It is now, it is over. I can't go back and bat. Because as a leader, I cannot carry that emotion and then get on the field to lead the team.
Yeah.
That cannot happen. So I'm not like 100% there if I'm thinking about my batting. So it was very important for me to deal with it before I lead, or I finish leading and then I go to the hotel room and then grieve that I got out And then next day when I get up, I'm fresh. I forget because it's done and dusted. The same applies even to the days I score 100. You know, I go back to the hotel room. I enjoy the little bit of success. Yes, I scored runs. I'm among runs. This is the best shot I played today. And when I sleep and wake up next morning, it's a fresh day. That 100 is not going to, I'm not going to start the next innings on 100. I again have to start from the beginning, from scoring the first run.
Yeah.
No, yeah. That's a process, and it requires practice. Yeah.
Yeah. You learn. You live and you learn.
Yeah.
Mithali, thank you so much. I've learned so much from this conversation, but mostly a couple of things that I'd like to leave all our listeners with is that you come across as somebody who can compartmentalize in an excellent way, obviously. Says so much about the magnificent career that you've had. And I also think of you as a horse with her blinders on at all times. You're able to cut out all the distraction, all the noise, and just focus and get the job done. And you are a leader for the ages. You lead by example and not just preach, but you practice what you preach. Mithali, thank you so much for being on this show.
Thank you. Thank you, Masaba. I had a lovely time chatting, and thank you for inviting me on the show.
No, pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much, Mithali. In the next episode of How I Masaba, I will be speaking to the educationist and philanthropist, Dr. Neerja Birla.
You were listening to How I Masaba only on Luminary. The podcast is produced by Monisha Singh Katyal and Rainshine Entertainment. Prithika Bajaj is our creative producer and Palash Kulkarni is our executive producer. The research for this episode was done by Anushka Mukherjee. The mix engineer for this episode is Ankit Thakur. Artist management by Versus Entertainment LLP. The music supervisor for the episode is Ankur Srivastav. The episode was recorded at Bayout Studios, Mumbai.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.